30 years of advice for your house, home, castle, or cabin.
Y'all have things you want to get done.
It's Rosie on the House.
O'clock is our open line hour. 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. You can text questions to 411-923. You can send a picture to info@rosieonthehouse.com if you need help describing or explaining the project you're working on in your home, castle, or cabin. You can send it there, info@rosieonthehouse.com. Those are the ways we communicate during the broadcast, email and phone line. You can reach us during normal business hours all week long, 1-888-767-4348. But the text is during the broadcast only. That's 411-923. And we've got callers lining up. But before we get to our callers, I have a little follow-up to get to first. A handful of broadcasts ago, sometime, I think it was December, November, a new homeowner to Arizona had moved in, needed a new air conditioning equipment, and their neighbor had referred them to call Rosie on the House and asked us about a proposal they had received from an air conditioning contractor. And they were trying to upsell them a UV light that goes in the equipment. The salesperson said, the reason we do this is to prevent copper from rusting. Now, I really think it was just an inexperienced salesperson that didn't realize the reason for the UV light in the equipment is for air purification and air quality control. And a lot of our partners do sell that UV light and say it is great for air purification. But it led me to this thought of, well, copper doesn't rust, it corrodes. Why does copper corrode and metal rust? And I mentioned it on the air that, hey, if anybody has an answer for that, call us in. We want to know the difference between copper corroding, or I say we, I, my curious mind, wants to know the difference between copper corroding and metal rusting. And we had a listener who at the time lived in Rio Rico. I understand recently moved to Sierra Vista, beautiful southern Arizona towns. Adrian Weaver, we've got him online. So, Adrian, first I have to ask, what stations are you listening to Rosie on the House in southern Arizona? We've got a few great affiliates you can hear us on down there.
I listen to you on KNST.
KNST out of Tucson, 790, and we've also got KGVY out of Green Valley. They've got an AM-FM simulcast. Well, thanks for tuning in that Saturday and give us a ring. What in your background and experience makes you qualified to talk about metals?
Well, I'm not an engineer or anything like that, and I, you know, maybe I'm not qualified, but I did do metal shop all through high school, and I did study metallurgy. I worked as a machinist. I've done some welding, you know, not professionally on the welding part, but I did work professionally as a machinist and also as a casting operator for Honeywell.
Okay. Well, that makes you a lot more qualified than myself, so that's good enough for today.
Sure.
So why does metal rust and copper corrode? What's even the difference?
Well, corrosion and rust is a term that is kind of the same thing when you're talking about iron. Rusting is just a term for corrosion specific to iron and iron type of alloys. But most metals do corrode to some degree or another, except for gold. Gold is non-reactive to most chemicals and oxygen and things like that. Copper does corrode, and if you look at the Statue of Liberty, the reason that it has that kind of greenish color is because that's what copper looks like when it corrodes.
So both caused by water. In copper, there's no iron, so it's not rust. Rust is just what they call it when it's happening to iron. Is that?
Iron and iron-based materials, yes.
All right, so there you go. Now we have an answer. Now, if you have an air conditioning salesman at your home that's trying to sell you a UV light to keep the copper, which is what we run all the refrigerant through that cools or heats the air, that's called the coils, that the UV light is to keep the copper from corroding, now you can tell them, no, that's not true, or not from rusting, that's not true, because there's no iron in copper. And go back to air conditioning salesman school before you go to the next homeowner, you knucklehead. Adrian, thanks for tuning in that Saturday's broadcast, reaching out to us, and joining us on air this Saturday.
Hey, thanks for what you guys do. A lot of interesting stuff.
And we've got calls lining up. Garth was moving into a brand new home and wants to know what to look for. Great question. It's an out-of-state area code. And I think he's coming down from Colorado. They expect Arizona to have five million more people. So I think a lot of those are going to be the same people that are using water now because they're going to come over from California.
That's a perspective.
Yeah. But there's going to be a lot of them coming down from Wisconsin, too, I think, and Minnesota after this. So we'll get to our calls next segment because we do want to cover water first. Mom was at a water conference yesterday.
So the annual Water Resources Research Center had their annual conference. The irony of it is that they had planned it for yesterday, Friday, the 1st of February, and the deadline for the DCP was Thursday, the 1st.
But that deadline wasn't set till December, and right. For a conference, right. You've got to start planning way ahead of that.
They had no idea. So it was kind of the setting, I have to tell you, it was over at Black Canyon Highway in a conference room packed. You look at Romy, just the diversity of what goes into making planning for our water. So everybody was in a really good mood because the legislation was approved Thursday. However, there is still a lot of work to do. So there's still kind of a new deadline of March 4th with the governors from all seven states that are involved in the lower basin have to come up with, signing and agreeing. And
can you name all seven?
I can. Can you?
I think so. California, Arizona, Nevada. That's the lower basin. And then you've got the other four would be Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, and Wyoming.
Very good. Very good. And mix the tribal lands in there as well. So all these people have to come up with an agreement. But everybody seemed pretty confident. That can be a pretty contentious topic. Think of the diversity. You've got people in agriculture. You've got homeowners. You've got builders. You have conservationists. And and then you have all that mixed together. Plus, you have all the different topographies we have. We have mountains and the arid deserts. And then the different sources. We have the Colorado River. We have groundwater. We have surface water. And so, each area. So yesterday was basically a bunch of panels, and so the different areas would present the dilemmas they had, and it was all about the solutions. So these are the dilemmas we have. What are the solutions? And within each district, there would be differences, of recreational land, mining land, homeowners, and so they had to come up with solutions. A lot of the solutions had to do with, affluent waters, taking the sewage and turning it into drinking water. That was a big solution. A lot of it's really hard to think about, isn't it?
And well, especially when you read the article in today's Republic about the amount of opioids that they found in the city of Tempe sewage, I'm guessing from 40,000 students at college campus, it ends up with a lot of things in the water. I don't know if they're purifying that out when they're taking it back to drinking water. I'm sure they are, but
Well, the good thing is the Water Resource Research Center is right out of U of A, and U of A is one of the top 35 universities in the country that does research, so they can figure that all out for us. Payson, for instance.
I really want that to be the solution, though.
It's here, baby. You think about the area of Payson, it's pretty much landlocked. It's this little island up there, and they were talking about the fact that up till recently, they have not been able to. It's been a full growth. There have been no limitations. If you wanted to move there, you could. So how do you solve this water dilemma? And one of the ways they have worked on is that the groundwater was contaminated by a dry cleaner. So they've cleaned that up. So just all the different things that have to go into cleaning up. It was really fascinating. And really, really, the cool thing was, with all these different dynamics, the spirit in the room was just, let's get this done. We had ranchers, agriculture was represented as well. Ag, as you know, takes up 72% of the water in our state, but they are also very responsible. As a matter of fact, Sina Kerr, who's our senator, one of our senators, state senator, Arizona Farm Bureau and Kerr Dairy, she's actually presented some different legislation to help, and that would be cleaning up the salt cedar in some of these washes, like Gila River, is miles and miles of salt cedar, which is not natural to our climate and is soaking up all kinds of water. So that was one solution, is getting the water back where it belongs. Sierra Vista has some amazing innovative things they have done to preserve the San Pedro, including digging basins. Well, they declared a lot of conservation area, and then they dig these basins and fill it with river rock to slow down the flow of water, so when it does rain, they capture it and it stays in the area. So it was just a fascinating day. Really was.
You know, an interesting article that was also in today's Republic was the engineering feat that brought the Colorado River to the valley, written by Paul Messinger. And I want to reach out to him and find more, because there was an alternate to the CAP that did not get approved. But when you think about it, it sounded like a smarter plan. So the CAP pumps water from the Colorado out of Parker. It's got to, because that, right, it's lower elevation than Phoenix and Tucson that the CAP provides water to. So, and if I remember right, a friend from church that works for the CAP and has offered to take me to the pumping station, it just never worked out. From what I understand, it's like 400 feet up that they have to pump the water out into the canal to start the natural gravity flow downhill. Well, an alternate plan would have taken the water out of above the dam at the Grand Canyon, which is above elevation and would have naturally flowed downhill, and they would have dumped it into the Verde River, which would have then just supplied the natural river flow, and then it would have been pumped out of the dams that you've got Bartlett, you've got that flows into the Salt, and you've got all those dams. It would have created more hydropower because of the more dams could have been built to produce power, but instead we've got this power-consuming pump to get the water up to the canal and down. So I'd love to know why that one was switched over the other, because when you hear it, the alternate plan sounded smarter.
And a lot of the solutions had to do with environment and preservation of species and stuff. So you never know. We'd have to do some more research.
And I think it's probably got to do with reservation land.
Oh, that
when
too.
You look at the path, CAP, as far as I know, doesn't come across in reservation land. Out of the Grand Canyon, in through Coconino, down into the Verde, I think you would have had to go through reservation land. That's probably the reason. But I'd love to dig into that more.